Welcome to ShollyCast, the podcast all about Lolly and Shota, including Not Safe for Work. ShollyCast is hosted by me, Hydro, and Dr. X. We're the developers of Insexual Awakening, a straight Shota visual novel game with incest, lollies, MILFs, onesans, and even a femboy character if you play Insexual Awakening 2, our sequel. If you'd like to play our games, you can download them at our official Barag at barag.net/cyberhex. And if you'd like to support Insexual Awakening's continued development and this podcast, you can join our Subscribestar at subscribestar.adult/cyberhex. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, everybody, to ShollyCast once again. I'm Hydro. And I'm with Dr. X. And for this episode, we are joined by Sinist. Welcome, Sinist.
Hello. Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you on. So tell everybody about what is it you do, because you actually develop games. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm working on a game that's on All the Fallen, called Libertine. I got a couple other little things that I'm doing on the side, but that's the main one. It's done in Koikatsu and Renpai, just like your guys' one that you're into doing Insexual Awakening 2.
Yeah. So what is your game about?
Ah, man, that's there's a lot of backstory to it that really is hidden. But basically, it's about a guy who is into... Player can choose if they want to be into the Shota side of stuff, but Lolly, Shota stuff, and he's been repressed for a long time, and he's had some problems in his past, so he's really kind of closed up and kind of given up on the world and basically deciding that he doesn't want to be around anybody, he doesn't want to be interactive with society, because he believes that they're all going to basically want to make him a pariah. He'd just be an outcast. So he hides himself. And then he's into a position where he has to go through a transformation, or gets put into a position where he has to activate or accept that part of himself and learn how to accept that part of himself, because it is actually going to do some good in the world, or in a small little community. It's about that.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah, it's an interesting premise.
Yeah.
I try to go for more of a realistic drama type of feel to things. I mean, you know, you always throw in some comedy and some little relief here and there, but it's a real thing. I mean, it's a real thing that a lot of people deal with. And I've had a lot of people come up and say, or message me and say, you know, this speaks directly to me. I feel just like what this main character is feeling, and you know, thank you for making it, I guess.
That's great. I mean, we've had people contact us as well, or you know, leave a comment on our brag or private message one of us, saying the same thing, that our game has helped them in some way, or they relate to the characters. So that's great. I feel like when I receive one of those comments, it feels very fulfilling.
Oh yeah,
because ultimately I want our games to make people feel good in some way, or even like maybe feel a little less alone. Of course, our community helps with that as well. So how does it make you feel?
When someone comes up to me or says, you know, that they like the writing, or that it's helped them or anything like that, it's actually probably the best feeling in the whole part of it. People that will support me financially, because this is what I want to do for my job, but I get better feelings when someone comes up to me and says, you know, hey, this was really great. I love this part, or this really spoke to me, or this really helped, or this really, you know, put things in perspective for me. And I feel a lot more, I feel happier about that than I do about the money, really. So I can definitely feel, I can definitely empathize and sympathize with what you were just saying about that, because it's the greatest feeling to be able to create something and put something out there and somebody say, I relate to that.
Yeah, exactly.
what inspired you to make this particular game? Like how did, where'd the inspiration come from?
The inspiration came from another game that I had done, did some writing for. There was always just this little kind of quirk of this little thing that happened that could be like, well, if we took that little bit and we just kind of built something around that happened around that, then what would happen? And I've always wanted to go this direction with a game, with a visual novel, into a Shali type of world, type of being able to tell a story using those kinds of narratives. And I drew a lot on my own feelings. So a lot of the main character's first part is a lot of what I've been through. And then just kind of saying, okay, what would happen if this would happen? And then you kind of go with the step to the step to the step, and it basically ends up writing itself. I really don't even come up with ideas. It's just like, oh, this is going to happen, so this is going to happen. And you just keep going with it. And there's not really any more inspiration that goes along with it. When you're writing a story, usually when you really get into the groove of it, you're just writing what the characters are telling you they're saying, and what the characters are telling you they're doing, because the characters that I write and such, they're pretty much their own people. I don't put myself into them really. They just tell me what happens in their lives, and I put it down and then try to make it in Koikatsu.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. You've created these characters that, as you essentially said, write themselves, because they're developed to that degree.
I'm a strong believer in that stories, whether they're in a novel form or a movie or TV show or visual novel or anything like that, the best stories come from characters and from personalities. It's not about really events that happen. It's about the people that experience those events and what they go through and what they think and feel and say, and their relationships with others, as to what makes the best stories.
I completely agree, because
I do too.
Without caring about the characters, or caring about what happens to them, it almost feels like there's, for one thing, not as much weight to the story. But yeah, I've always found it difficult for me to care very much about a story if the characters aren't captivating me to me in some way.
It's a human condition to want to connect with somebody, whether it's in a social setting or when you're watching a movie. There's a reason why protagonists usually are the heroes and heroines and stuff like that. They're the people that we try to be, and we try to emulate them. And so we look at them and put them up on a little bit of a pedestal and say, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to be. And I'm going to try to be like them. And so they connect with them. You're exactly right with that. I'm sure you guys have had people come up to you and say, you should do this in your game, or you should do, or why can't you do this in the game? I totally get it. Cause I get this game developer. That's, we sit here and talk about all the stuff that people come up and say. Anyway, I've had people come up and say, could you do this in a game? Or what about, do you think this would happen or that? And it may not be something that I feel is right to go in the story. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But it also might just spark an idea. And it might spark like oh, what the hell? That wouldn't happen. But, if we take it and we just twist it just a little bit, then this other thing can happen. And this might be really interesting to throw in there, and it really makes sense to the story. And then you say, thank you. Thank you for helping me out. I can't come up with all the with all the storylines.
Yeah, and one of the things I do like about, for example, on the IA server, we have a wish list channel. So people put a bunch of their wishes there, and for a lot of them, you really get the sense of how much they care about the story and characters.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, that really speaks to me, because it feels very special. And
yeah.
And I like that like what I've created has made that impact to them, that they care so much to the degree that they'll offer their ideas on what happens. And it's not necessarily even something sexual at times.
No, not even that. You guys, I can totally see it with your guys, both one and two. I mean, there's all kinds of quirks and characters. You guys wrote those characters, you know, pretty damn good. I mean, you really, really felt a connection with them. And that's a lot of what I strive to do. And I love it when people come up and say, you know, this, you know, I love Isla. She's, you know, so many people come up to me and say, ah, she is so great. I was like, yeah, she is. She's an awesome girl, you know, and it warms my heart to be able to create a character that's going to reach so many people and cause them to fall in love with her, you know, because it's not, I wouldn't say that they're my children, but I mean, it's just like you have something you create and it is more than just the, you know, the fapping. The sexual animations and stuff that you put together and everything that you put out there and little quirks and little twists and turns and stuff like that. You get these people that are really invested in the characters' lives, and that's you know, that's great. I love Tracy. Tracy, you know, is awesome. I mean, I'm a fan of Shota's.
Yeah, I'm glad you like Tracy because I made him.
Yeah, that was all Dr. X's. That was all Dr. X's writing and concept and everything. So, what you were saying about the whole part of like it's not just about the fapping and the sex. It's like it goes back to what you were talking about with just stories and characters in general, right? Like if you just like for me, if I just had a straight Shota game that somebody made and all it had was just pure sex scenes and nothing else, like you didn't even get to know the characters or anything, I mean, yeah, it might be fun to check it out just for a quick fap, but in terms of like being memorable or wanting me to come back to it, I don't think I'd have much attachment to it, because I like to see build up and I like to see characters develop their relationships and their personalities. Mm-hmm. Because then it makes the segs part much more satisfying and much more meaningful.
Oh yeah.
I remember when I wrote Robin's, who's Daniel's mother in IA2, the main character, when I wrote her like big scene, that was over like 100 pages of dialogue.
I remember, yeah.
Are you, oh my God.
And that was a enormous scene. And I remember there were people who said they actually got teary-eyed reading through that part and getting very like emotional over Robin's backstory and it really, really like, you know, if I was a player playing IA2, I would feel so good and so satisfied with the characters and the story leading up to, like, you know, the huge sex fest scene, as we call in Dr. X and I.
Fuck fest, yeah.
I would just be like so pumped up for it. I'd be like, you know, those bros that go, let's fucking go. That would totally be how I'd feel.
Well, here's a question for you then, Hydro. That scene that you did, the 100-page scene, you know, the emotional thing, how many times did you go back there and play it yourself before you even released it?
Well, every single scene that we make, we go through a reviewing process where at least for me, I'm sure Dr. X does it too, is we write it first, then we proofread it and go through it again. So it's kind of like we're reading the scene before it's in the game to mm-hmm. proofread and look for his mistakes and stuff. Then we have it programmed in the game and we review it again. So it's a few times that we go through it. And I remember going through that scene and it took me a very long time, but I really felt I did feel like the emotional depth of it, which I was satisfied. I was very happy about, because that's how I wanted it to come across.
And we're very meticulous about planning the scene and stuff. So Hyder and I discuss pretty much every scene, you know, things you want to do in the scene, like the points you want to hit in the scene, and the scene's overall place in the route. We do a lot of deliberation from that standpoint as well before it's actually even written.
You guys have it all mapped out? You guys have it all like mapped out as to what's going to happen at the end and everything?
Yeah, for the most part, yes. But, you know, it's not 100% concrete until it's actually written.
Yeah.
But we do have a pretty good sense of how the routes are going to go. Not 100%.
It's kind of like there's...
But we do absolutely plan things ahead of time.
Yeah, and there's different steps, which I'm sure you probably might do, Sinist, where like you have level one, where it's more like just a general big overview outline of like a route for a character. Then you get a little more specific on each individual scene and what it leads into. And then when you finally get to the scene itself, you get even more detailed and so on and so forth. That's kind of the approach that Dr. X and I take. And it helps a ton because I know very much about off the cuff writing, because I, you know, when I in the early stages of IA1, that's kind of how I did it. Like I did have, or rather what I would do is I would have an outline all in my head and I wouldn't even write down like the outline of how a route would go for a character. And then I would just write it as I remembered it. So it was mainly just my horny brain working overtime to be able to remember all the stuff I was interested in putting in the game.
Well, a game like IA or IA2, you got a setting just like anything else, and everybody does have their own system of writing. It works best for them. I mean, that's one of the biggest things you got to learn if you're going to get into something like this, is to learn how you feel comfortable in doing it. How you can be productive and make what you want to make. And you guys had a really strong idea of what you wanted to do with IA2. Even if you went off the cuff in IA for the first one, it was still cohesive, it was still good, and it was still forward. What I mean is like every update went forward instead of trying to patch up something or fix something that went bad in a previous update. I'm more off the cuff, so.
Yeah, like, I mean, I remember, even with IA1, even if I was like, well, I would write very linear, which means like I would kind of sometimes get hung up on specific parts of a scene because I wasn't willing to like skip forward in the scene past something, and it would kind of create a roadblock. And then as IA2 came around, I still had that a little bit, but then as I got used to thinking non-linearly with a scene, I became a lot more efficient at writing scenes. And of course, when you do end up being able to just move efficiently through a scene, you end up thinking, oh, you know what, this is how I can tie that part I was stuck on, that I know how I can tie it together now and work with it. And I've just become much more efficient at it and not getting stuck nearly as easily anymore. And I think you do learn a lot of things every single game you make.
Oh yeah, you know.
You learn a lot of lessons. You, of course, probably the number one thing Dr. X and I know is there are things you didn't get to in your previous game that you want to get to in the next game. And then that's a big driver too, to make more. And there's always more you can do, and there's always other things you can do. I think that's what makes it fun, though. That's what makes you want to create more.
Oh, yeah. I've always been a creative person. I've done everything from running D&D campaigns or Shadowrun campaigns or whatever campaigns to writing music, writing stuff. It's just when you get into creating, if it's something that you really get into, and I'm sure artists are like this. I can't draw worth anything. That's what I was telling Dr. X. That's why I use Kwikatsu. There's no way I can do a 2D game. There's just no way. But when you got the drive to create, you have to create. There's just no other way around it.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, that's why whenever I hear about musicians, and you know, I'm not making fun of them, but whenever they say they retire, I'm just like, do you really retire as a musician? Like until your fingers like cripple up and you can't even move them anymore. I'm pretty sure you're going to remain making music the rest of your life if you're a creative person. Same with being a writer, an artist, anything. The creativity is always going to flow through you, and you're always going to have ideas.
Yeah, the ideas are always going to be there. The physical ability to do things, though, I mean, you're getting older. I'm not young, that's for sure. There's some days I get up, my fingers are cramping. I don't know if it's carpal tunnel or if it's arthritis or something like that, but there's just sometimes that it just does not, a couple of days it just doesn't really work. And that's fine. You know, there's the thing about being a creator is you gotta know when you aren't, where you don't have the muse, where you're not creative, where you're gonna fight against making something. And if you try to make something, it's not gonna be worth it. You just don't have the creative spark that day. Just go to bed and just do it the next day.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been in bed about to go to sleep and had some ideas come to me. That happens as well.
That's the worst place to have them too. You can't write them down. You can't type them out. Oh, yeah.
That happens to me with musical ideas all the time. I hate it.
No. Sometimes you do remember it at least. So that's good. It's not a complete waste.
Wonder how many great ideas disappeared because they were thought of somebody just on the edge of sleep.
Yeah. So before you started working on Libertine, like for how long did your ideas about making a game about or involving Shodan Lolly, how long did that exist in your head?
For Shodan Lolly, pretty much since when I found that Shodan Lolly games existed. I always liked and collected stuff back, you know, years and years ago, but I didn't really go out and search for it. It wasn't something that I actively looked for. I mean, I found it and find it in some places. You'll find it on, you know, back in the day on 4chan or 2chan or whatever. And when I first got into doing games, of course, I didn't, you know, you start off with, a lot of people start off with the mainstream stuff, the ones that everybody puts on. I mean, now you can find them on Steam, like Acting Lessons and Being a Dick and stuff were two of my first ones that I played. And I mean, it was fun. It really got, I was like, man, you know, this would be kind of fun to do. You know, this doesn't look like it's too difficult to do. But then when I started playing some and I found Koikatsu games and hand-drawn games and such, and then found ones that had some Shodan Lolly, including In Sexual Awakening was one of the first ones that I found. Yeah, it was. I mean, that and maybe I don't even, I can't remember. I mean, your eyes is just stuck out because it was clean. It looked clean. Some of the old Koikatsu stuff was so fuzzy, you know, just not really well put to, not, it didn't look really well. But those were years and years ago. One that pops into my mind and is continuing to is Long Lost Daughter, I think, was a Koikatsu one that was like that. And when I realized that that kind of stuff was out there, that's when I started looking into doing it. But that was back in 2020. That was during, you know, COVID, when it seemed like everybody was making visual novels and putting them up. So that's when I first kind of started thinking about doing it. But I really wasn't sure about the legality of it. I wasn't really good at it. I mean, I tried to downloaded Koikatsu and tried to do it. And it looked so horrible. I still have images from it. It's just so bad. It's so bad.
Yeah, it's a learning curve for sure.
Oh, it is. It is. I mean, but that's for anything. No matter which ones that you get into, they're
absolutely, yeah.
I mean, you see artists that do incredible, incredible hand-drawn stuff. Well, they've been doing it for 20, 30, 40 years.
Yep.
Of course, you know, do it every single day. Yeah, you get into it, and yeah, eventually you get better.
So previous to making Libertine, had you made any stories involving Shodan Lolly, or was this the very first time?
This is the first one that I made with Shodan Lolly. I've done some other ones under different names and in groups. Lent out my help. I'd have done some HTML, basically just writing. I mean, I didn't really do much anything else. Worked on one that was in Daz as a writer, did a couple little, you know, smaller side projects. But then when I got into doing it myself, I basically drifted back to Koikatsu because it just works. It just does. I feel comfortable with it. I feel comfortable with the characters. It's fun and easy to use. And bringing in the Shelly stuff has really brought a peace to my writing, like pieces and calmness, like whereas I'm supposed to be. You know, what I'm supposed to be talking about, what I'm supposed to be writing. So it's a lot easier to go through this stuff than it was the non-Shelly stuff.
Honestly, I think I really understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I do too.
Because I'm just trying to think of like I don't know. Like, I guess like writing for something that doesn't really speak to me too much. I think that would be a little, that would definitely be a little more difficult. And also I was thinking, as you said that, I was also thinking about, of course, In Sexual Awakening, but also the podcast as well, because it does feel like something I should be doing. I mean, people have told us that, you know, they really, you know, Shalacast means a lot to them.
Mm-hmm.
One reason being that it makes them feel less alone. That's a big one for sure. And that's one of our primary goals, really. So, you know, every guest that goes on Shalacast really helps, because everyone brings their own perspectives. And, you know, that's honestly, that's another chance for someone to listen to Shalacast and feel like they're not alone in that there's someone else who feels the same way. I think there's a very, very high chance another person who is who writes Shoten Lolly or is a game developer of that stuff, or wants to be, they'll hear your episode and be like, yeah, man, I totally relate to this. Like, this speaks to me. So I'll thank you for being on.
Yeah. Well, we are a bigger community than most people think.
Yeah.
And we all do feel alone and such because of just the whole situation behind it. But, you know, ATF and Barag and all these other places and such that, you know, unfortunately are starting to kind of disappear, you guys are doing a really big service for helping people to realize that they're not alone, and that, oh, hey, you know, there's, you know, I want to get into this artistry. I want to write this, but I don't necessarily feel like, you know, I have a voice or I have, you know, an outlet or anything like that. Where you guys are just, hey, yeah, come on and, you know, talk about your stuff. And, you know, I'd love to be able to inspire somebody to go into making another visual novel and stuff, because I don't want to be the only one out here doing it.
Right. Yeah.
I've said before that there's totally going to be a very high possibility that there's going to be someone who will play your game, Sinist, or will play IA or IA2, and down the road that they'll make their own visual novel that'll become really popular either in the Lolly Shota community or will become like really popular on Steam or something like that when the restrictions get pulled away. And they'll be like, yeah, well, my inspiration came from this guy, Sinist, or my inspiration came from, yeah, these two guys, Hydro and Dr. X. And it's always fun to think about how that definitely could happen. I mean, you know, that's how you get inspired to do stuff, is you play something or remember something very fondly and you want to kind of do your own thing. I mean, that's how I kind of got into making IA, because I had played two games, because I was similar to you, Sinist. I kind of had learned about like straight Shota kind of games, except it was around like 2016 or 2017 or so, and played a few of them, and I liked them, but they didn't quite fulfill what I was hoping for. And that's when I decided to make my own game.
That's exactly right. I mean, they inspired you and you guys inspired me. So, you know, the funny thing is, I mean, you think about it, with the nature of the internet and the nature of files and such, the stuff that we've created, whether you're an artist, a musician, anything like that, it's out there and it's gonna stay out there. And
yeah,
decades, you know, a century down the line, it's still going to be out there.
Yeah. So, you know, it makes me think about, like, you included, we're part of the history here of the Shoten Lolly community for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys are.
It's kind of crazy to think about. And you too as well, man.
Well, we'll see.
And well, you're taking a step towards that for sure, being on podcast.
That and creating, yeah.
And how long have you been working on Liberty?
I think I started in September of last year. Or is this 2024 still? Yeah, okay. 2020. Yeah, September of 2023.
Oh, nice.
A little bit less than a year. A little bit less than a year.
Cool.
And I mean, I've had so much fun making it that I'm also actually working on two extra little side story things that will eventually get out and get released and stuff, to kind of to practice and focus my abilities in Koikatsu and to learn a little bit more about that. But it's just a drive to create, you gotta, if it's there, I gotta ride the wave.
Now these games that are side stories, are they set in the same universe as Libertine?
One of them is. And, well, actually, if you're talking about universe, yeah, both of them are. One of them in the same kind of locale, but, and there's a couple crossover characters if you're paying attention, but one is a full Shota game, just male and only males.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is incest with, right now it's a brother and two sisters. Brother is older, but I've set it up and I'm going to do it where you play a first part of the game with these three, and then the next section will be about their kids and their, you know, their kids growing up. And so the young girl in there will grow up and be a mom in the next one.
Oh, that's very interesting.
So you're going to see kind of a progression of it. And so you'll play different main characters in it. Like right now, kind of character is the older brother, but then in the next one, I'm thinking that it's going to be like it's almost kind of like in Sexual Awakening, where you've got a Shota main character with maybe a Loli sister or two Loli sisters, and a mom, maybe an aunt, you know, some other things that are just going to go along with it. But it's all set in a medieval setting, so it's all about, you know, the family that's, you know, very closely tied together, and it's all natural to them, but they're also kind of outcasts, so they keep it hidden that they propagate between the family.
Oh, interesting. So you're kind of employing that aspect in that game as well, because it sounds like there's a little bit of that trying to keep things hidden in Libertine. Is that correct?
Well, it's kind of hidden, kind of not. I mean, it's not. I'd just say you have to play the game to see. But no, it's not. It's not. It is hidden. I mean, it's not like they're out there. It's not like it's a different world where it's all acceptable. It's not acceptable. That's what the main path of the main character is going from a position of, you know, I'm evil, I'm bad, you know, I don't deserve anything, I should, you know, I'm gonna stay alone, I live alone, you know, I make what I make to get by, and that's it. I don't need love, I don't want love, because love is just going to lead to bad shit. And then finding out that, you know, it's not necessarily like that, and you have to learn to accept yourself to find some kind of happiness, because if you don't, you're just denying yourself who you are.
Very, very interesting. Yeah. Anyone can go on ATF and download your game. Is that right?
Yep. There's a public version that's out. I believe, when are we on? Okay. I think 0.5 is out. 0.5 is out. And then 0.6, I think, is going to be coming out in August for it. I'm actually working on writing 0.8 right now. 0.7 is done. 0.6 is released to the supporters. They're one update ahead, so they're on 0.6. So they'll get 0.7 2 weeks before 0.6 comes out to the public.
Yeah, it's kind of the classic method of developing a game.
I'm not trying to ask, right? You know, what your guys' situation with, you know, making money, is it your main job, is it whatever, but it is something that I'm focusing on to make it my main job, is to be a creator, whether it's Sholi or not or whatever. I love creating, I love writing, don't necessarily love working in Koikatsu, but I can make it through, but I love writing, so that's my main focus on it. And So I need supporters if I'm going to do that for my life, for my job, and quit my day job and such.
And that's totally cool. You know, I really do wish you the best of luck for achieving that.
I appreciate that.
Because that's a dream, right? That's what you want.
Yeah. That's how I would want. Yeah, there's a lot of stories to tell.
Yeah, and I mean the financial part of, you know, being a creative is always one that's. That's tough, because that's always basically the barrier to you being able to make more creative stuff. Because if you're able to have that be your primary income, then you can now create, you know, all the time. And that's great. Us creative people are people who need to be able to pay bills and live comfortably. So it's not like we'll be perfectly happy living out of a cardboard box while we type on our laptop or whatever. So Yeah. And I mean, thankfully, there are places like, you know, Fanbox, and there's places like Subscribestar that offer the ability to do that, because it's kind of crazy to think that prior to, I would say prior to like 2014, 2015, I mean, that was even before like Patreon really took off. And I mean, prior to that, being able to be like independently working on games and or like any kind of creative projects, it was pretty tough to get income. It's pretty difficult.
Yeah,
especially if it was a porn game. Yeah, you're kind of shit out of luck, honestly.
Yeah, that basically. So it's great that these platforms have come along, and hopefully more of them will grow as time goes on, because well, we've talked about Patreon at length and how much they suck, but hopefully there will be even more opportunities for creatives to be able to do that, especially for Lolly and Shota creators in particular, or any creators that may be on those kind of the fringe stuff, as they're sometimes called.
Yeah, if anyone checks out Sinus Game and likes his game, they really consider supporting him.
I appreciate it. I get more satisfaction out of hearing how somebody likes it, or even, you know, has, you know, I like it, but even that can, I mean, that's a great feeling, you know, to know someone played it and enjoyed it, or at least enjoyed parts of it. So, I mean, you support if you want to, and I appreciate that, but you know, even if, you know, you don't want to, you know, and it's not just me. I'm talking about all artists, whether it's, you know, Dr. X and Hydro, or any of the artists on ATF or Fanbox or anything that's out there. If you like it, just drop them a note and say, hey, you know, I really like your stuff. You're doing great. Keep going. I can't wait to see what you make next.
Yeah. And you can also share it with your friends who might be interested in the same stuff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's, you know,
if you have a friend who likes Shota Lolly, then tell them about Libertine if you like it. Yeah, stuff like that really helps.
Yeah, it does.
And of course, it's not just one or the other. Like, if someone is supporting you, there's also a pretty good chance they've said something about your game that was positive. So, oh, you know, it's, yeah, even better when it's both. But like, as Siniston, you know, we've been talking about, even if you can't, if you don't want to, or you can't financially support someone, just sharing the game or creation, or, you know, sending the artist or creator a nice comment really does help. Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, you'd be amazed how much that will lift the spirits of a creator, because, you know, when you're creating something and you put it out there to the world, you know, the number one thing is, as a creator, is you like to first create for yourself, first of all. But when you find out others also enjoy what you create, it really can set like a fire in you, to really inspire you to do more. And it gets you excited. And it's great when you get that feeling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. These two know what they're talking about.
Because it's like you almost get excited to like release what you're working on to the people who are waiting excitedly for what you're making. So it's kind of like like a two-way street kind of going on, basically.
Absolutely. There's a guy on ATF. I can't think of his name. I wouldn't say it anyway, just to be sure. But he's in the thread and stuff. He always comes in and says, man, I had a bad day, and then I saw you had an update. It's great. And thank you, God, that helps. Everything like that. I got, you know, there's people and supporters that have been supporting me for a long time on different things, and, you know, they stick around. I mean, they're like a, you know, it just feels great. I'm sorry, it just does. I appreciate everybody that comes out and says anything. Always a good thing to go out and just, you know, tell people if you like what they do, tell them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, as we talked about, it's not all about fapping and shit, but what I'm curious about is like, what are the kinks that you have or that are in Libertine?
Well, it's a lot of vanilla stuff for right now, because it's still kind of early. And like you said, libertine is not really all about the sex and the fapping and whatnot. It's about the relationships, because if the relationships are built, then the sex means more.
Absolutely.
But in my games, I mean, you're gonna find Sholi, you're gonna find incest. Even if it doesn't seem like there is. And that's a hint for anybody playing libertine if you haven't caught on yet. I said foot fetish is stuff I put into most of my games. And stories always optional, because you know there's some people that just aren't into it. Romance.
Oh yes, the romance kink.
my favorite.
You know, sometimes it does feel like a kink, because it's really not often included in some porn games, honestly. I mean, actual romance, you know.
Well, this is, I mean, here's one that's in libertine, and it's something I've never really seen in any other story, and that's what I wanted to do. Is you have two characters that are getting really close, and they have the same kind of kink for Sholi, right? So they're getting close, and they're getting closer and closer, and they spend a night in bed, and one of them's telling a story about their first time. So you're seeing the Sholi stuff, and they're both feeding off each other, and they're both kind of getting off on it at the same time. And while the main character is basically just he's just finger fucking her, you know, he's just telling the story, and it's just getting her going and getting her going and getting her going, because she's just picturing it in her head. And so you see images from that happened. And it's, again, you have a choice as to what happened. So there's different images, and then it just, you know, it ends up being the thing, but it's something that's, I have not seen happen in any other game, whether it's Sholi or non-Sholi, you know. I've never seen it, so that's why I try to do different things.
Well, that is pretty interesting. You're right that I don't think I've ever seen that in one time. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's very clever. I like that idea for a scene where it's like you're actually progressing like the like fantasy or the story that's being told in the person's mind, and it's pretty cool. I like that. Yeah, I've never heard of that either.
And I mean, if you think about it in any kind of a life, you know, any just man, woman, woman, whatever, they're sitting around. I mean, they're just, you know, they're starting to fool around, and one of them starts, you know, fantasizing, what if this happened or what if that happened? And you just kind of get the other person going and stuff like that. A lot of people do that. There's so much that happens in our everyday life that can be brought into a story to make it, you know, not just the same thing over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And how did you get into Shonen Lolly in the first place? Some people mention like, oh, I saw this fan art hentai of this character or something. What, in your case, how did you get into it?
I don't know. I there wasn't one image or one thing that happened. Actually, I take that back. My first introduction to it, Boku no Pico.
Oh yeah. That's a classic at this point.
Classic. Yep.
Exactly, classic one. So I mean, that was just, I mean, it's something that you just kind of, I don't know if I saw an image before that, you know, something that just made me think, hey, you know, I didn't know this stuff existed. But that's kind of the first thing that I remember is being like, oh yeah, I'm gonna download that.
Yeah, and there's sort of like this meme going around, like it was so horrible that you can watch it. It's like, it's very vanilla and tame. Honestly, it's just really funny, the kind of mythos around Boku no Pico, like the meme, don't watch Boku no Pico.
It seemed like perfectly fine to me. I mean, it was censored, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, the most offensive thing about it is that it's censored, honestly.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I can't watch, I can't play a censored game. I can't do this. Yeah.
But that was your first real introduction to it, or like the first time you really started getting to it?
I think so. I mean, that's kind of my first memory of it. But I don't even remember when that happened. I mean, it's probably early 2000s, maybe 2010. I don't even know how old it is. But yeah, that's that. And then everything kind of laid dormant. You know, I didn't really look into it. I had a lot of other stuff going on in my life. And then COVID happened. So it was like, either shut down, stay home, you get it. And so you're stuck at home for 2 weeks to a month, and then get so bored out of your mind, and you're just looking, and you're looking, you're going through X Hamster, and you're going through Pornhub, and you're going through RedTube and all these other places, and you're just like, oh, this is so just, it's not, it isn't what I need. And then you just decide one day, well, fucking Google something. And you Google something, and leads you to, you know, adult games on Steam, and then it leads you to, you know, places like F95 and Lewd Zone and all those other places and stuff. And then you just start digging deeper and deeper and deeper, and you start finding all this stuff that's out there that's, I wouldn't necessarily call it underground, but it's gray. It's the gray part of the internet that's not really out there on Steam and stuff like that. And you start, you know, looking at stuff like In Sexual Awakening, or Long Lost Daughter, or what are some other ones? I'm trying to remember which ones are out there. Lucky Paradox, and, you know.
So that's how you found out about ATF in the first place, kind of pulling that vine of porn games, basically, and eventually it led to ATF?
Eventually, yeah. I started making Libertine and was trying to figure out a place that I could put it, you know, for download and such. And I was trying all these places, and it was like, no. And ended up on Lewd Corner, and then somebody said, you need to go to ATF. I was like, what's ATF? And so they told me. I was like, oh, well, there you go. I think I've gotten a better reception on ATF than I have any place anywhere. So
that's great.
I think it's a great place, a great resource for people that are into Sholi and are struggling with any kind of problem in that neighborhood.
Oh yeah, that's ATF does serve a really important role of, like, support. You know, everyone has differing levels of interest in this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even if you just have a little bit of interest in Shonen Loli, for example, you know, having a support network helps, because, you know, everyone knows who's listening knows about the stigma, even just liking very very stylized, you know, Shonen Loli stuff. So, you know, I'm really glad places like those exist. And I'm glad that, you know, sounds like you had a pretty good reception on ATF. That's great.
It's been positive, yeah.
I'm actually surprised you started your game before you found out about ATF. That's interesting. But honestly, it was the same thing for us, I think. I could be wrong. Well, I think we, Hydro, I think we, I did we make ever make the any threads on, like, Wallisit and Shota-chan before we actually released the game? I think we might have, actually.
I think we did on Shota-chan, I think, for the first IA. I could have sworn we did. It might have been just when it released or just before it released we did.
I don't think it was like many months before, though.
No. It was like right before.
I think we wanted to avoid that, the whole thing about posting about a game that's too far away from release. It's very tempting. It's super tempting to do that, but, you know, it's something I try to avoid. And about any kind of project, really.
Yeah, I mean, the only game we really did that with was IA2, but with IA2, it wasn't that far out from being done. It was more like we preemptively were just like, hey, you fans of IA1? Yeah. And then they were just like, oh, well, we got IA2. and then we set up a subscribe star, and, you know, we got our early kind of like early supporters who already knew about the first IA, and it kind of gave us a head start and, you know, worked out from there. But with the first IA, I mean, we were posting on F95, the Shota site, ATF, Lewd Corner didn't exist at the time.
Lawless it.
I want to say I actually even posted it like on a primarily furry forum, but I could be wrong. I can't remember. I cannot remember. I think I did, though. And what ended up happening was it just spread around. It just got went all over the place. And that's ideally what you want.
Yep.
Like, I know some people are very protective of, like, oh, I don't want my early access to get, well, you know, I can understand that. But on the other hand, the more it gets spread out to all these different sites, like, the more you're going to get eyeballs on it, which means more people are going to be interested in checking it out. And that's the reason why it's super important. Like, I don't, I'm sure you do this, Sinus, but do you put like links like on your game, like when you go to the main menu, do you have like links to all your sites to support you and stuff?
I do now. It's something I didn't, I'm not very good at coding. The only thing I do writing, I code and I kind of work Koikatsu. It's kind of, I mean, it's just, those are, you know, I'm beginner grade on, but I did put it on that. And I noticed as soon as that one came out, I tripled my supporter list.
Damn.
I was like, holy shit. Like I couldn't keep up with it all. It was crazy. I was in love with it. It's great. So yeah, I'm going to do that, but you're right. You got to get eyes on it. I mean, even if it's just a 0.1 or a prologue or, you know, just even an advertisement of, hey, this is coming out. Cause you can do a couple promo shots and get it out there. You guys had your first game was such a success and got spread around that all you had to do was use the same name, say it's number two, and they know it's you, they know what you're going to come with, they know that, you know, what they're going to get, and they're absolutely just going to flock to you. So yeah, get it out there, get it to everywhere. Problem with Libertine is it just won't go anywhere.
Well, you know, the longer you develop it, it really has a chance to spread, you know. But I wonder, is like, since you said that after you had started putting links in your game, you know, to your, you know, how to support you and stuff like that, that you got more activity there because, you know, there's a pretty good chance your game was posted on some random fucking website and then someone downloaded it. Yep. And then they saw those links and clicked on those links and then started supporting you, because that absolutely does happen. It's happening with IA. Like, it'll be get posted on random fucking websites, like random weird websites and stuff like that.
Sketchy, like pirated game websites posted in Russia or whatever. And then somebody finds it. And, you know, when we've released IA, the first version, I remember we were very like, we were just like, okay, we have to have at least, we have to have scenes for all the major like family member characters, Simone, Sam, and Kira, meaning the big sister, the Lolly, and the mom. And then also put in some initial, like actual, like hand-drawn scenes for, I think we did it with Sam first and then Sam and Kira were the first two. And I think just from having those initial things that garnered more interest, that it gathered a lot more interest than if yeah. It was just pure bust art. Or, I mean, I'm sure it still would have attracted people, but I think the more you put into that first version, it's like that first impression is what really can grab people.
Yeah, it really depends on the kind of game you're making.
That's true.
But for porn games, if it is possible in general for the kind of sexy stuff to happen early on, you might want to consider making sure some sexy stuff happens in the first build. For other games, maybe that are slower to get to the sexy stuff, you know, that might not be possible, in which case it's probably fine just to, you know, post like a 0.1, kind of just setting up the premise and stuff. You know, there are definitely different approaches to it.
And that's, I mean, that's why I did most very, very little, very, very minimum. With when IA came out, you guys had a kind of a perfect storm. You had a premise, a story, a setting that appealed to a lot of people where there wasn't really anything out there yet, and you had that 0.1 or 0.2 or whatever that you had out there. And nowadays it's, you have so many people that are putting out the first things, and they're just putting out the first ones, but they're lacking in something. They're not taking the time. They're just, and players, at least from ones that I can see that I listen to and talk to and such, they've been burned on a lot of stuff about people making, you know, a 0.1 or something like that nowadays, or in the past couple of years, thinking that they're gonna jump the heights that are like the Mr. Dots and Rooney and all these other creators that have made huge sums of money, and they just see that, oh my god, these guys are making $50,000 a month, or these guys are making $60,000 a month, I can do that. No, it's a little bit more involved than that. You really have to have started early. You know, the people that got in early, that got known early, are the big ones. Now people, when people are coming in, unless you're top tier, unless you're S tier, you're kind of, you just kind of go along and go along, and it's fine. I mean, you just got to understand that that's, you know, that's the world that we live in now, that the market is so saturated than it was 4 or 5 years ago, that you can do something and make a life out of it. You're not going to make $50,000 or $60,000 unless you're dumping that kind of money into it. You're not going to get out of it nowadays. But just keep plugging away. That's the other thing. You just got to keep going. You can't give up, because if you give up, then you're just like everybody else that, you know, leaves after a point one or point two, you know, and abandoned game. Well, you know, your name is tied to abandoned games, and you're never going to get anywhere.
And the good news is I don't think the market is nearly saturated with Lolly and Shota games. Those are still very few and far between. And, you know, I kind of think about things as the 10% rule, which is you have people who want to create a game, like an adult like porn game, and the people who come up with the idea and actually see it through to get to write it or start developing it. 10% of them do that. Then 10% actually make it to, you know, actually getting a release out, and then 10% of that actually continue developing the game. So you know, if you're able to even get to developing the game and getting something out, that's already an accomplishment in itself. And yeah, for those of you thinking about wanting to make a Shota or a Lolly game, please do, because we need more. We need more of them.
Totally agree.
Yeah, with the Shota and Lolly, like, it's not saturated. It's the only difficulty really is just the platforms you can post it on.
Yeah.
And for stuff that you can, like, post on Patreon, yeah, it is super saturated. But I think you would have an advantage if it's like something really niche that someone's not a whole lot of other people are doing. In other words, if you're like doing kind of like a very standard like everyone are human adults, and it's in college or whatever, it's not like a super unique premise, so you might have some difficulties getting a huge following from that, just because you have so many competitors.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But if it's something niche that not a lot of people are doing, then I think you have a better chance, really. And I think that's probably what a lot of creators that are big owe their success to, is that they hit a niche that people have really been wanting, but they can't really get much of it. Some kind of, you know, obscure fetish, or, you know, do like a fetish that's not represented a whole lot.
Yeah, that's absolute truth right there. Absolute truth.
Yeah, you know, and it's been very interesting talking to you, Sinist.
Yeah.
As another game developer and person who uses Koikatsu. Of course, we didn't go too deep into the Koikatsu talk. Maybe the next time we talk or something. But
yeah, I'd love to come back at some point, you know, maybe when Libertine's closer to being done. And yeah, absolutely. I do hope other developers come on and talk about your experience, because there's a lot of creative and good creative people out there. Sometimes all you need is a little push. I hope we're able to push a couple people tonight to, you know, follow their dreams and make something that they're proud of.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely what we want to do on the Shotacast. It's, you know, support the community, inspire them, remind them that they're not alone. You know, yeah, so it's, you know, it's really been great having you on, like, really fantastic and fascinating talks.
I'm great. It's great talking to you guys. I love your guys' work. It's like I said, you guys inspired me, so that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Now, people can primarily find you on ATF, correct? All the Fallen, is that kind of your main profile page?
There's ATF and Lewd Corner are the two basic game threads. I believe you can also find it on FAP Nation.
Love that name, FAP Nation.
Well, you know, you gotta get it out somewhere. I mean, that's just yep. The way that it is. But yeah, or, you know, the links for Discord are on there. I'm usually on, because my real job is basically being on a computer, and then my love job, I'm basically on a computer all the time. So come by, say hi, you know, would love to talk to you, got mad ADHD, so just, you know, you get me talking and I won't stop.
I think you had mentioned that you had like made a deal or something that if you got enough supporters, you'd be on Chilecast.
Yeah. That was right when I started making it. A guy on the Discord, 94Coon, I believe you guys did a question and answer or something, and I noticed his name pop up a couple of times.
Mm.
But he's just like, yeah, you got to go do Chilecast. And this was like when 0.1 came out. I'm like, I just let me get established first, and let me do this a little bit, and then. And then when are you going to do it? Are you going to do it? It's like, all right, I'll tell you what. So when I hit 50, I'll say, hey, you know, we'll do it. And then, yeah. So maybe we'll do it again at, I don't know, something else, another number.
Yeah, that'd be great. Doing another episode with you, and you can update us on your progress and like what you've been doing. That'd be great. Because we had a fantastic time with you this first time.
And even if it's not about that, I mean, other stuff, you know, going on.
Yeah, totally. Now we can talk about anything, really. But yeah. So do you have like a Subscribestar?
No. So I've got Ko-Fi. I've got Fanbox. And they seem to be working perfectly fine. Yeah, it works for me for right now. So that's
cool. Yeah, yeah.
Careful about what you put on there and you'd be fine.
Yep. Cool. So that was a great episode with you. Sinest, and you have a great night.
You guys too.